brings us to agenda item number 9, Savage Neck.
Savage Neck, Virginia LLC and others request authorization to install 5 180-foot-long offshore breakwaters with beach nourishment situated adjacent to their property along the Chesapeake Bay, south of Smith Beach, and north of Sand Hills in the Savage Neck area of Northampton County. The project is protested by a nearby property owner. Arrow marks the location of the project in, on the bayside of Northampton County. A little closer view. Smith Beach is approximately 1.4 miles north. This general area here. And Cape Charles is 5 miles south, just off the bottom of the topo map. Project is approximately 1,200 feet north of the Sand Hills breakwaters, which were permitted, two or three years ago. You can see that here. Long-term erosion rate is approximately 5 feet, and there's no SAV in the vicinity of the project. There are two homes under construction by the applicants, one here and one here. The Clarks property, who are protesting the property, are protesting the project, are here, and they also have a vacant lot adjacent to it. It's 900 feet up to the lot with their home on it, 600 feet up to the vacant lot from the project. Commissioner Tankard's family has a trust, and they own this parcel right here, which is the adjacent property owner to the south. Mr. Tankard called yesterday and did not have issues with the breakwaters themselves, but wanted to go on record as saying that he does have a right-of-way from another parcel of family farm down the beachfront down here. Now, whether or not that's true or not, I don't know. I've never seen it on any plats, but he just wanted to make sure that it was part of the record. The 5 breakwaters are all 180 feet long. They're approximately 35 feet wide. There's 50-foot gaps in between. And what you see in light yellow is the approximate mean low water mark as it existed back in whenever this was, mid-March of this year. I'm sure these sandbars have changed. They move around. The intent here was to put these breakwaters inside the dominant bar that goes along the shoreline so that transport to the south would not stop there and be collected behind the breakwaters and would continue down and help protect the adjacent property owner's property. There will be nourishment behind the breakwaters with beach quality sand that will impact 62,980 square feet of state owned submerged lands. Here. In a section of the breakwaters. The height of the breakwaters is 6.8 feet above mean low water. The nourishment behind it will be to an elevation of 4 feet above mean low water. And I was wrong, it's 33 foot of base here. And the will be class 3 armor stone, which is approximately on average 1,000 pounds. Apologize for the blurriness of this, but this was taken back in March. You can see the escarpment. It's about a 3 to 4 foot escarpment here. Breakwaters will be off in this general area here, and this is looking to the northeast towards Smith Beach. The Clark's property is around the corner here. Still looking northeast. This was taken last week. You can see the dominant sandbar. Here. The intent is to be just inside of it or just maybe a portion of it. Looking south, you can see the Sand Hills breakwaters in the distance. Again, Sand Hill breakwaters. And if you look real close, there's some stakes out here showing the location of the breakwater, proposed breakwaters. Also, there was a pine net that's about 360 feet south of the proposed project. I talked to a license holder, and he doesn't have a problem with the project. Again, looking south, and you can see the erosion in the 3 to 4 foot bank here, and the trees falling in, and all the stubble. I'll just keep this up there. The issues that we're addressing today is Mrs. Price Mears Clark, who is a nearby property owner up here, has concerns that the breakwater will cause further erosion to the clay bank and beach on our property, and she also believes that the proposed design has not been time-tested. VIMS states that the offshore breakwater system across multiple parcels is its preferred approach for the shoreline. Breakwater systems preferred for the stabilization since they provide better habitat and do not sever the connection between upland and the tidal zone. In response to Mrs. Clark's concerns, VIM stated that the net sand transport along the shoreline appears to be to the south. Impacts to parcels to the north of this project would be anticipated to gain sand and potentially a water beach over time. Sand available to properties to the south may be more limited after construction of the breakwater system. However, the proposed project initially is to provide additional beach nourishment that will allow for the creation of a beach with a removal of sand from the longshore system. Maintenance and the enhancement of this beach may require periodic renourishment. So again, PIMS is expecting this area to increase with sand, and this area in here will probably lose a little bit. And you can see down here what's happened to the Sand Hills breakwaters. If you look real close, there's a fairly large buildup on the north side, and then there's an erosion issue on the south side here. This went in front of the Northampton County Wetlands Board back in March, and they approved their portion of the project. Game and inland fish anticipates no significant adverse impacts to threatened and endangered wildlife resources. Department of Conservation and Recreation recommends an inventory for the tiger beetle conducted in the project area. The applicant has agreed to the Army Corps of Engineers special conditions as required by Fish and Wildlife for the protection of the northeastern beach tiger beetle, and the permit is still pending. They have in their permit, it appears that they're going to put a time of year restriction in there from June 1st to September 15th. No other state agency has commented on the project. And our recommendation in summary, Section 28.2-104.1 of the Code of Virginia encourages the use of living shorelines as a preferred alternative for stabilizing tidal shorelines in the Commonwealth. The applicant's breakwater system is consistent with the legislation that was passed in 2011. Mrs. Clark's property is approximately 600 feet north of the project area. As stated by them, the net transport along the shoreline appears to be to the south, and therefore impacts to parcels north of the proposed breakwaters would be anticipated to gain sand. In Mrs. Clark's case, we believe her property will not be impacted by the project. While we are sensitive to Mrs. Clark's concern, staff also believes that the project has been designed to minimize the potential for adverse effects along the adjacent beach while providing protection for the applicant's eroding shoreline. As suggested by our shoreline management, best management practices, the breakwater project appears to have been designed to address the specific site conditions and has been designed with the appropriate spacing and distances offshore. Therefore, after evaluating the merits of the entire project and after considering all the facts contained in 28.2-1205A of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends approval of the project as submitted with a one-time royalty assessment in the amount of $3,149 for beach nourishment, fill over 62,980 square feet of state-owned submerged lands at a rate of 5 cents per square foot. Mr. and Mrs. Clark are here.
Thank you, Mr. Bastard. Any questions from the commission?
And the agent is here also.
Mr. Erskine.
Mr. Badger, I had a question about the adjacent property owner just to the north. Have you heard anything from that adjacent property?
Not at all. Matter of fact, they're going to make out like a bandit on this. They're not paying any. It's a $500,000 project. They're not paying anything, and they're going to be the ones that are going to gain, just like Mr. Tankert gained a little bit on this corner down here.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't have said anything either.
Mr. Ballard.
And Mr. Tankert had no objections to this?
No, he didn't. He just had a concern for the record that he is landlocked on his property and his only access is by a deeded right-of-way along the beach from other parcels, family farm up here along the page, which I find unusual, but he wanted me to relay that to the commission.
Any other questions from the commission? Thank you, Mr. Badger. Here. Is the applicant present or represented?
Good morning.
Good morning. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
I do.
Thank you very much. Please state your name for the record.
Wayne McCoy, Mid-Atlantic Environmental, here on behalf of Kimberly Jarvis and
welcome, Mr. McCoy.
Savage Neck, LLC. Also with me, in case you have any hard questions, I have Bill Parr, who is the manager of the Savage Neck LLC, and also the real estate representative for Ms. Jarvis, and also David Kledzik, who was a professional engineer and did the design work. I know you have a long agenda. I'll just hit a couple major points. We've gone through a fairly rigorous permit process. As Hank mentioned, we went to the Northampton County Wetlands Board. It was unanimously approved. I will say that no one stood there in protest or opposition at the time. We did hear that Mr. Tanker had a right-of-way along the beach and that he was going to speak to that, but to date we've not heard anything from him. So just for the record, we were unaware of an actual easement. We've received our core permit. The design that we used is consistent with BIM's guidance. Scott Hardaway, I try to go to all the BIM's forums and educational seminars because I learn a lot every time. We have had a very significant, I don't want to use the word oppressive, set of guidelines for this project by U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Similar to your experimental five-year protocol, we are going to be monitoring this project for 5 years, and actually it's more rigorous in the sense that we also have to provide geo-rectified aerial photographs because of a concern, I guess, going forward now with offshore abutments and in tiger beetle areas that the south adjoiner might actually lose some tiger beetle habitat. Certainly it's been our experience, as Hank mentioned, that the northern adjoiner actually benefits from these projects. In this particular case, we are actually, in order to create the tembolas, we are actually nourishing a fairly large segment of his property. So he is making out like a bandit. The difference in this project and how we designed this, there was a minor modification. Again, the concern for the downstream, the southern adjoiner, and the loss of beach and habitat, tiger beetle habitat, for the shore is really something important. I had done a design on the Fisher property up in Ockahannock Neck. We actually changed the angle, and you'll see that in your drawings. The southernmost is not sort of the usual V, and it's at a slight angle. We've actually, in that one, I didn't want to be the guy that took the stand away from Silver Beach YMCA. And so we kind of, oh, super, thanks. Now, if you look at that southernmost, it doesn't look like the others. And it's a little flatter, and And that's, again, a technique I use at the Fisher property because we didn't want to, I didn't want to be the guy that took the sand away from Silver Beach YMCA. Now, in retrospect, it's worked well. We anticipate that that will be the case here. We tried to use the topography to our best advantage. There are actually two sandbars. There's a one that is seaward, so we've come in landward of that and try to use the that. We've also actually built this up a little bit more because of sea level rise in anticipation of that. I guess the other thing that probably has changed since these documents, I believe the third, Ms. Price Clark is a developer, and she did an 8-lot subdivision, actually sold the property to Kim Jarvis. And I believe she sold now 3 lots adjacent to Ms. Jarvis. So she's really about 700 feet away to the north. So having said all that, obviously there's been tremendous erosion. There's an 18-mile fetch on this property. And what do you think? So it's just Chesapeake Bay. But there's a lot of wave energy here. So we think we've designed a real good way of abating that, and so they'll have this for many years. Available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. McCoy. Any questions from the commission? Mr. Bauer.
Can you explain to me what the difference in the design of the southern piece is, what the effect of that is?
Yeah, you know, one of the things, and I had a long talk with Scott Hardaway, I've been to one of the seminars. You notice the four are kind of bowed, look more like a hot dog. That last one is flatter. It's straighter, and it seems, and it was something we tried at Fisher, and it worked really well because we felt like the potential vortex of littoral drift might cause the swirling and taking of the beach. That seems to stop it. Now, large sample size, no. But it's worked.
Any other questions from the commission? Thank you, Mr. McCoy. Appreciate it. Does anyone else present here wish to testify in favor of this project? Is there anybody present who wishes to testify against this project? Please come forward. Sir, are you an attorney?
I am.
Okay.
You can swear me in, though.
Don't need to.
Please
say
sir.
Your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Don Clark. I am an attorney in Virginia Beach. I am representing my wife, Price Mears Clark. And first of all, before I start, and I'll try not to be too lengthy, a couple of things to just respond to Mr. McCoy is that Mr. Crestel, I believe he's the property owner between the proposed breakwater and my wife's property. He is, thanks, Hank. He's selling his lot, so I submit he really doesn't care that much about what goes on. Mr. Tankard's right away. That's been an issue over the years and really hadn't been addressed. We pointed that out when I believe we did a title search, and I would submit that if this goes into effect, if you approve this application, that he may well need a bridge to get over part of the beach to access his property. Enough said on that. And finally, my wife is not a developer. She is a property owner. She sold. She was a 1/3 interest owner. Holder with one lot, and her brother sold 2 lots, so she's not really an official developer. Anyway, I'm not trying to be a bad neighbor. I'm not trying to be contentious, and I will submit that most of my comments are pretty subjective. We've been going to this property for probably 35, 37 years, and we've seen how this beach changes virtually overnight. I mean, it changes from week to week, month to month. It's constantly moving. The sand's constantly moving. The sandbars are constantly moving. My two concerns are really that this proposed design, has not been time tested. We don't know what is going to happen. We don't know whether the sand's going to. We can speculate where it's going to build up, where it's going to be, where it goes away. We can speculate about that all day. Mr. McCoy, in an email to me, when we first started talking about whether we were going to agree or disagree. He said, first, the upstream, and I quote, first, the upstream neighbor is generally not affected by these types of structures. You know, today he seems to know that the upstream neighbor, that being the neighbors to the north, are going to make out like bandits. And I would dispute that. We don't know. It's going to change. It's changed over and over throughout the years. I took some photographs, and if I could just offer them, I didn't put them on the computer. Can I step forward?
Yep, please.
This is a photograph that was taken last October from my wife's property looking southward. And this is a photograph that was taken last week, I believe, from my wife's property looking south, or approximately. And, I mean, the point is, it just changes. It changes all the time. The sand hills, which are... The sand hills, which are to the south of this property... Right, that's perfect. These sand hills right here where these...
Is there one?
Got it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Clark, we take these sessions here.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't know there was one. These are the sand hills where these breakwaters were constructed some time ago. And this land down here, which is not in this photograph, has a fairly large cove cut into it now. It's right on the park. It's right near what they call Savage Neck Dunes Preserve. It's a cove, really, and it's got all these dead trees that are exposed that have come up. So obviously the erosion to the south is there and was caused by these three breakwaters. Again, I hate to be redundant, but this is a dynamic beach. It's filling back in. You can see from that photograph right there, if you looked at the photographs that the Mr. Badger showed, that the more recent one, October 2014, shows that the beach is reinventing itself right there. So there's no reason to try to change things. And I think the law is pretty clear, and reading from the Constitution of Virginia, jetties, groins, breakwaters should be designed in such a manner that their location will not create adverse sediment transport patterns. They should be designed in such a manner that they will not be breached by tides and or fail under wind, current, or tide conditions normally experienced at the site. And the anticipated effect of a proposed groin field upon adjacent properties is an extremely important consideration. I would concede that maybe my wife's property is not immediately adjacent, but it's close enough. And I think it should be taken into consideration the tiger beetle. I mean, we've talked about the tidal beetle here today. And... you know, the tidal beetle, this is their habitat. And, you know, the applicant says he's concerned about the tiger beetle. But, you know, it's a situation where, you know, the tiger beetle is able to move east, west now, north, south now as the beach. This thing may well require it to move just east, west, unless, I don't know, maybe they swim. I guess they know how to swim. But it's just something that doesn't need to be done on this scale. We've got three down here that have worked so far to replenish four or five houses all the way down 1424, 1426, 1474, 1488. Why do we need five? Why do we need a football field worth of a jetty? I mean, my understanding that we should be doing the minimum to afford relief to the applicant. And I don't think 1,100 feet is the minimum. And I would submit that this will be a permanent structure. This will change the movement of the sandbars. The sandbars will never be the same. And the sandbars they do their job at this point. Again, the beach changes, but they ultimately do their job. And for those reasons, I just cannot, on behalf of my wife, agree to this proposal. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Any questions from the commission?
I have one.
Mr. Close.
On the pictures, were they both taken on high water?
One of them was taken on low water, and one of them was taken on mid-tide. Just to show that the more recent one was just to show how that beach has built up on its own. Because I think, can you show that one picture that you had looking north? Excuse me, looking south. No, there was another one. Any other questions?
Well, didn't I understand you to say there is erosion?
Oh, yes, sir. There is erosion. There's constant erosion, but it moves from one place to another. And it's just natural erosion.
And you don't think this would stabilize that?
I'm not sure. I don't think it's been time tested. Perhaps it would stabilize it in some place, but it's gonna detract from another place. And I haven't been able to get any information from anybody that says, go look at this one. This is just like this and see what it's done. It's clear that it will stabilize the erosion in front of the applicant's property. What's not clear is what it's going to do to the other properties. And we can speculate about whether it's going to help, hurt, but I submit nobody knows. And Mother Nature seems to be doing somewhat of a decent job. It's losing ground someplace, but it's gaining ground someplace else. And again, those three breakwaters that were put to the south, they've caused a vast amount of erosion to the immediate south.
I got a question.
Mr. Cedar.
How far do these lots extend into the water? I mean, has there been a certain amount of, like, 10 feet, 50 feet of the lot washed away? Or is that where the lot ends? Say, like your wife's lot. We don't see that up here, but say that was it right there. Does the land, the lot, end right there where the tree line is, or does it end way out there in the water somewhere? In other words, has erosion taken part of your land away?
Yes, sir. It has.
You know how many feet?
Part of the land everywhere.
You know how many feet out into the water that would be?
No, again, I'm not an engineer. But I believe, Hank, don't the property owners on the Eastern Shore own property to the low mean water mark? Isn't that unique about the Eastern Shore?
Oh, no, it's Virginia.
Okay.
Mean low water. I think what you're saying is when the property was subdivided, where did the plat show mean low water at that time,
right,
in relationship to now?
Right.
And I don't know.
Can I further? But in Virginia, I mean, if you, when it was subdivided, that land went out, say, 30 feet or four, can't the property owner reclaim that? In other words, if his lot was, say, where that, you see where you got your arrow there? See the arrow?
Yes.
Okay. See the water to the right of it where that sand dune is? If that was the original location of the lot in Virginia, can't you reclaim that?
You own to the low water mark, wherever that happens to be. You can erosion or accretion. Just own to the low water wherever it happens to be.
Well, and that one, I guess that's kind of the issue with Mr. Tankard's right of way. I mean, that right of way was created probably 100 years ago, I believe. And it was for the purpose of it, as my recollection is, to take pine shadows and transport them along the beach from property A to property B. So I don't know, and it does say something along the beach, but we're not sure.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Erskine.
You indicated that this has not been time tested, but the applicant testified that there was a previous project that was permitted where he made a modification to this kind of system, and it was actually showing benefit to the properties to the south of this project. So my question to you is, what do you feel would be the adverse impact with this? Now, he submits he doesn't have a large sample size. He has one other previous project that showed a potential benefit to properties to the south. What do you feel would be the negative impact?
Well, that's a valid question, and you know, I don't know. I don't have an answer for that. You know, I guess we could have had an engineer or somebody, some expert, come in and say this will not be a positive impact, but we don't. Again, it's my understanding that this particular design is the first of its kind, and so that's part of our complaint, is that, you know, we don't know.
Would you suggest a compromise? I mean, considering there's significant erosion, you know, in the area, what would be your compromise? The compromise to say just leave it alone, dynamic. There are a lot of dynamic areas.
Sure. No, the compromise I would suggest is what I said earlier: the minimum necessary to afford relief to the landowner. And again, there were four houses down there with three, and there are two houses, and they want five. So to me, three would be the minimum necessary to afford relief to the landowner. Their property is going to be built up.
Mr. Cesar,
you think you might benefit from talking to the applicant for a few minutes in their conference room and see if you can't work something out?
I don't have a problem with that, no, sir. I'll be glad.
How about the applicant? Where's the applicant?
We've talked. We've corresponded by email, I think. I mean,
well, what I'm saying here is now you're before the commission, and you kind of understand where we're going with our questions somewhat, and it's a give and take, and we always like to see if the people can work it out. So if y'all would want to do that, I think I would ask the commission to drop your matter down and let y'all talk for a minute.
Well, I'm perfectly willing to, on behalf of my wife, and I think she is, to speak to whether or not we could compromise this down to three of these things. I don't know whether the applicant is willing to compromise them down to three.
That's what I'm asking y'all if y'all want to talk about.
I understand. I understand, but Mr. McCoy just said we'd already talked.
I'd like to get some testimony from the Virginia Institute of Marine Science here on this breakwater system and it's just how these have worked in the past and how much experience we have. Mr. Bruno, you were sworn in earlier.
Yes,
you just say your name for the record, please.
Virginia State Marine Science. We have maybe some background to help you make your decision here. Beaches are extremely dynamic. They never are static. This is a highly energetic area. We've done surveys of every dune and every beach in Virginia. We've done erosion rates, shoreline evolution reports for most of the shorelines in Chesapeake Bay. This is one of the first that we have done. There's high erosion here, and this area has benefited from erosion. You have a lot of sand in this system here. You have a lot of offshore bars that you don't have anywhere else. They're very mobile. The mobility is also toward the shore. The dynamics of this area are that the erosion of the sandy scarps feed the beach. That's mostly sand that's in the upland. It's very sandy clay in this area. That's why you have a lot of sand in the beach and offshore area. Seasonally, beaches, especially where there's a lot of sand, undergo seasonal dynamics. In the wintertime, they erode because of the energy. And studies have shown that a northwest face, which is this area, even with offshore bars that help wave energy, they still erode the beach seasonally. They get smaller in the wintertime. In the summertime, when you have more subtle motion of waves toward the beach, they build that sand up. It's taken back up on the beach, and you have that. So you have a dynamic with this area from the scarp down. You have a lot of sand in the system. It is highly erosive. What we recommend in these areas are offshore breakwaters, as you have before you today. That does not sever, which I'm not too big on that term, it doesn't cut the sand supply. It remains, sand remains in the system because of the design of this approach. If you had a riprap revetment up against the shoreline, you will have no more sand in the system there. This is apparently looks like it has been designed, and I've worked with Scott Hardaway on these things, that it does allow for the sandbars, and they do move south. This is a southward area, and some of them move very fast, a little bit north of this especially. As for the designs of these systems, I would disagree that they have not been time-tested. We've done a survey of every breakwater system in Chesapeake Bay, and they are the preferred system, especially in these highly energetic areas that are affront Chesapeake Bay. When you have a large fetch, especially from the northeast or the northwest or any north facing, because that's where most of your energy comes from. I'm not really certain what the gentleman means by minimizing this from a rock perspective. There are various ways to design these. You don't just cut and paste from something off the shelf. They are designed for the system that they're going to be addressing. All shorelines are different, and there is not a shoreline structure. This goes back to the House of Burgesses when they were decided that you could protect your property. There isn't a structure there is not a structure that could be put on the shoreline that you can assure that does not have an effect on an adjacent property. So that's just the case. That's the way shorelines work, and that's the way structures along shorelines work. So there are cost benefits. That's not why I'm here. That's why you're here. However, changing the design, I'm not sure of the utility of that. I'm not sure what a minimalist design is in the eyes of the protestant. This has been designed, and we do have very good baseline on the design of these. There's a 1.65:1 algorithm that you do with your breakwaters versus your tombolos. The breakwater length has been studied. It's a pretty extensive database on how you design and the utility of these. So we would not agree overall in general that these have not been time tested. These are the preferred methods that VIMS would recommend and has recommended in these cases. So with that, is there any questions? Could I fill in any blanks?
Yes, sir.
The protestant says, well, you don't need five. You need three or some lesser amount than five. Can you comment to that?
Well, I'm not sure that would change anything north or south of the project if you did that. I mean, that could be looked at. What this does is this will, whether it be five or three, what this does is it acts as a headland to hold the sand. These breakwaters, that's all their function is to hold the sand. Now, some of them can be hot dog shaped or straight. That's the wave reflectivity and refraction around those to how they impact the behavior of the sand immediately adjacent. And those are, as you see all over the place, they're designed differently for the specific location and shoreline situation. Three versus five, you're going to still need probably the same amount of sand at the same elevation. It's the elevation and the amount of sand that really is your erosion control in this area. So the design can be looked at. We wouldn't disagree, or I would agree, that the design you have in front of you will be effective. Whether there is something less amount of rock, I'm not, like I say, I don't suspect that would have any less influence on the upstream and downstream properties. Yes, sir.
Mr. Ballard.
In your opinion, do you think what's the likelihood of any effect to the protestant's property 900 feet north of these installations?
Well, that's a very good question. Not sure that's in the zone of influence of these. They have some empirical information from the ones at the south about how far they go in influence, and it's very close. This is a small amount of shoreline and a huge bay. So I would look there. That's all I can offer you at this time from that. I really can't answer that.
just to clarify, the impact you're saying you believe would be on the south end of this project, not the north end?
Generally, it is, if you, let's say in this situation, your longshore transportive stand is south. That's pretty well established. There will be a reduction in the amount of sand that is available to the very near shoreline. That's why you have that little area there. And that has been known ever since we started using these structures or any other groins and that sort of thing. Yes.
So it's been known for generations.
Long before me.
Okay. Any other questions, Ms. Verno? It's still public hearing. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify against this project?
Can I just make one follow-up comment?
Yeah, come on up, Mr. Clark, here.
Just one. I'll be brief, I promise. I believe I just heard the gentleman who spoke say that elevation and the amount of sand were the most important points, that it wasn't the length. Did I understand you correctly? That it wasn't the length of the structures?
Yeah, but please address the commission here.
Okay.
I thought
I'm
it said
sorry,
somebody
I'm,
kind
I'm,
of
no,
kind
to,
of stood
I'm
on
used
the
to
stuff.
Being in court, so I'm,
yeah.
You know.
Okay.
But that's my concern. I mean, if that's the case, then why can't we get something smaller that'll do the same thing, that'll nourish and, you know, again, we've got these sandbars that change all the time, week to week, month to month. And we're going to put something on top of one of them that's going to be permanent.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Clark. Mr. McCoy, since this has gone back and forth a number of times here, I'll give you a chance to wrap up on a quick rebuttal, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Bull. just a couple points of clarification. Mr. Clark mentioned that this hadn't been engineered. Actually, you'll notice you have a sealed document by a professional engineer, David Kledzik of Marine Engineering. So it has been engineered. It has been engineered to the standards and guidelines of VIMS. This concept, and I don't know if you received a copy of my cover letter that came in with the joint permit application, but I addressed the issue by doing slightly smaller. We have attempted to reduce the impact to species such as horseshoe crab and turtles that require access to the beach habitat. Additionally, we've increased the height of the revetments by one foot. We did this to reduce the overtopping of the revetments, especially in light of increased sea level rise in the bay. We kept the footprint of the revetments to the minimum necessary to get the correct angle of repose for the revetment walls. The concept of three or five, these were 180 long revetments. Normally, I've done 200. So if we're looking at shoreline protection, I could do three. Now, I'd have to start the one-year process it's taken me to get here today because we'd have to re-permit and go through coordination again because this is what has been permitted by all the other agencies and reviewed. But what I'd have to do is make the three revetments approximately the same length as the five to protect that shoreline. It's not that we design because we like rock in the water. It's we're protecting the shoreline. And so that zone of influence for the protection is basically a formula, as is the creation of the tembolas. So. And if you indulge me and enjoy the testimony of Mr. Parr, I think he'd like to address the issue of...
If we make it very brief, because I think we've hashed and rehashed this a number of times. Mr. Parr, you were sworn in earlier?
Nelson.
Do you hereby swear the testimony you give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, self you got?
I do.
Thank you, Mr. Parr. Please state your name for the record.
My name is William Parr from Cape Charles, and I'm a manager with Savage Neck, LLC, one of the applicants, as well as a representative of Mrs. Jarvis. And I think it's important to state for the record that we have searched diligently for documents concerning Mr. Tankard's easement that has been verbally suggested, and we cannot find any document. and you know, we're completely unaware of any right that may exist for an easement, and I think it's important that it be said there are no documents that anybody has. And I don't believe that there is a basis in science or in fact for the protest. During the we've been a year in this, and we brought in professional engineers, Mr. McCoy. We had advanced meetings with Fish and Wildlife, advanced meetings with VMRC staff, and have taken a full year in the course to get to you today for this permit. And I was involved with the project down the beach 1,200 feet south and have watched it from its inception. It works. It's a very proven method. We have more structures than that down the beach. There are 5 3-acre lots down there that got those three structures. In this case, we have 2 25-acre lots and a 10-acre lot. It's a bigger beach. It's more land. We're talking about, as opposed to the 15 acres that they were protecting with those three structures, protecting 60 acres with our structures. It's a bigger area. The scale is the same. So reducing the number of structures would not be an accurate way to minimize it, because it is to scale with what's down the beach. And based on the best science we can find, this is the appropriate environmentally sensitive way to approach this project. During Hurricane Sandy, I stood on the shoreline at the peak of the storm and watched pieces of shoreline as big as a Volkswagen separate from the top of the bank and fall into the bay. And the amount of energy there is phenomenal. And we've lost it on lot one that was purchased from Ms. Clark probably as much as 40 feet since we started this application process. Ms. Clark's brother, Ben, told me that there's probably a quarter mile of land loss landward, that there was a very long walk to the water from where the shoreline is now when he was a teenager. So this is an area that's had some very serious erosion, and it's well documented. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Clark. Any questions, Mr. Clark? Mr. Clark?
Yes, sir.
We've given the applicants another bite at the apple. I'm happy to give you another bite as well.
Well,
in the interest of fairness,
I'm just going to make one comment, and that is that Hurricane Sandy, the erosion that took place was from south to north, and everything we've talked about now was from that's replenishing the beach, and the north to south is what causes the erosion. So, again, my point that was initially made, nobody knows. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. The public hearing is now closed. The matter is before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Bailey.
I applaud the applicants. The research they've done, the design seems to be very well thought out. They've gone through all the proper channels. And if the appropriate time, I would move that we accept staff recommendation.
I'll second it.
Is a motion by Mr. Ballard to accept staff recommendation, a second by Mr. Beck. Any additional discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any noes? The chair votes aye as well. The motion passes. Thank you very much.